Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
This week's episode of Harry Potter and the Sacred Text is brought to you by BetterHelp. BetterHelp is a mental health platform that provides direct online counseling and therapy services via web or phone text communication. You don't even need to use flu powder in order to access a therapist through BetterHelp. I think we can all tell in book five that if you keep your feelings bottled up, it can start to affect you negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off of your chest if you don't have access to Dumbledore's office. I know in my life, therapy has helped me identify patterns to help me interrupt ones that I don't feel like are healthy and find better ways to cope. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/sacredtext today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/sacredtext. Chapter 30, Grop. The story of Fred and George's flight to freedom was retold so often over the next few days that Harry could tell it would soon become the stuff of Hogwarts legend. I'm Vanessa Zoltan.
I'm Jackson Bird.
And this is Harry Potter and the Sacred Text. Before we get started, I just want to let you know that you might hear some background barking in today's episode. We didn't want to interrupt it because we have a suspicion that it is actually like the dog network of the Scotland Yard looking out for some lost puppies that have been kidnapped by Cruella de Vil. So we let the barking happen, and we just want to thank all of the dogs out there doing their best to keep us all safe.
So goofy. And maybe you won't even hear the dogs at all in the recording. They've actually quieted down already.
Jackson, welcome back to Harry Potter and the Sacred Text.
Thank you.
In our announcements, we like to tell people, of course, that they can listen ad-free if they subscribe on Apple Podcasts and also on our Patreon, where they will also get a bonus conversation about you and I complaining about words we don't like how they are used.
Mm-hmm.
Because Harry tells Hermione to not nag him in this chapter. And I was like, I hate that word. I have never heard the word nag and been like appropriately used.
Yeah, that's a great point. I don't know how anyone would ever use that in a way that, like, I think it is meant to be annoying, but we'll get more into that.
We're going to get into that in our Every Flavored Bean conversation. But also, can you just let people know where they can find you if they want to follow what you are up to in your life outside of Harry Potter and the Sacred Text?
Yeah, absolutely. You can follow me these days mostly on Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok at Jack is Not a Bird. And you can also always pick up my book Sorted, S-O-R-T-E-D, at your local library or independent bookstore.
Which, Jackson, you are one of the only people I got to do this to. I have a bookshelf of books written by friends, and I bought your book before we were friends. And
Whoa.
So I got to move you from my memoir section to my friend's shelf.
Wow. Oh, that's mm-hmm. such an honor.
The honor is mine. I was like, oh, I get to move this. Anyway, you have a story for us on the theme of determination. What story do you have?
Yes. So another thing that I do outside of Not Sorry and posting YouTube videos and making books is I'm in an experimental theater company in New York City called the New York Neo-Futurists. It's a company that's been around for 20 years in New York, but I just joined in 2022. But I actually sort of started the journey of joining the company all the way back in like 2015, I think, when I first saw a performance of this theater company, actually at NerdCon Stories, which is a conference that Not Sorry might have been at, or at least a lot of folks in the Not Sorry community, I bet, were there.
Oh, yeah. No, we've been to NerdCon more than once.
Nice. Yeah, NerdCon was wonderful. I loved NerdCon stories, but the New York Neo-Futurists were there because a lot of them were in Welcome to Night Vale and like started Welcome to Night Vale. So lots of podcast love all around here. But I saw them perform, and what they do is they perform 30 original plays in 1 hour. And when I say original plays, I mean those are plays that are written by the people in the company. And as someone who has always loved writing and performing, I was watching that and was just like, this seems like the best thing ever. I want to be involved, but oh, I gave up acting in high school and like, I'm just not qualified enough. I'm sure I'll never be good enough. But over the years, I got to know more of them better. And eventually up in like 2019, I was talking to one of them and realized, you know what? Maybe this is something that I have the capacity to do, that I am like talented and skilled enough for, and I want to give it a shot. So at the end of 2019, I started like working on my audition, and I auditioned for them in early 2020. And it was a very like nerve-wracking experience and very like difficult and challenging, but in fun ways. And I got a callback, which was amazing. But then our callbacks were scheduled for March 14th, 2020. I think you all know what that means. Just the callbacks were canceled and did not happen. And being a small nonprofit theater company in New York City, they didn't have the capacity to bring on new members for 2 years while they were just trying to stay afloat as artists in the city. And they kind of kept us up to date for a while during that period. But then in 2022, we were invited to audition again. And at that point, you know, my life had changed a lot, as all of our lives changed in the pandemic. But it still felt like something that I just really felt to my core as like, I really believe that this is something that will help make me a stronger writer, a better performer and speaker, like an all-around better artist and just better person. And so even though it didn't really fit in my life as much anymore at that point, I still wanted to try and do it and worked very, very hard at that audition again and fortunately made it into the company. What's funny is it was so hard getting into it, and especially having that extended period of 2 years during the pandemic. Like, it was basically a 2-year-long audition in some ways.
Yeah.
2 years between initial audition and callback. But it has still been a tough thing to stay a part of because it is a very like grueling kind of process. And so I have felt like I have been very determined to stay in it, even when it hasn't matched my life as much as it may have in a alternate timeline where the pandemic didn't happen and I got in a few years ago. But I can just feel how worthwhile it is. And so just sort of when I was thinking about determination, I was like, I feel like I have sacrificed some things in my life. I have really stuck to my guns. I have been committed to seeing this through at least for a little bit so that I can like just have gotten what I want out of it, something that really means something to me. So when I've been thinking about determination, I've just been thinking about why do we feel that determination and what do we do in that determination?
Yeah. And when do we know that it's determination versus just like stubbornness mm-hmm. or continuing down a path? And I think that you really highlighted one of the things that differentiates it, which is that you have to sacrifice other things, and not like in a self-sacrificing way, but in a life is busy. And if you are determined to accomplish one thing, it means that you have to not do other things. And I think we see that in this chapter very clearly with Hagrid, for instance. Mm. But yeah, I do think that like true determination requires sacrifice, which is why it's complicated.
Yeah. And I like what you said too about stubbornness, because when I was thinking about this theme, other like words that tangentially came up for me were stubbornness and also commitment. Mm-hmm. I kept thinking of commit to the bit like in comedy.
Yeah.
And so I've been
yeah.
wanting to tease out, and I hope we will as we discuss with this chapter, sort of what are those differences between determination yeah. and stubbornness, between determination and commitment, which makes me wonder, could we maybe take a trip to Etymology Corner to tease those out?
Yes, I won't be able to tease all of it out, but it really does come from a legal background, which is like the determination of the court. So it's a settlement of a controversy by a judge or by reasoning. It comes from the Latin verb determinare, but it's a legal judgment.
Wow. I was not expecting that. And now that I think of it, it feels a little bit more obvious that, you know, I've heard the yeah. phrase like, this is our determination, almost as in this is our decision.
Right.
And I had not thought about that in preparation for this episode. So this will be interesting to see how this sort of changes how I'm thinking about this chapter now.
Yeah, it's as though when you are determined, you see it as a law for yourself, right? Mm, like, mm-hmm. I have considered it and I have judged that this is something that I am going to do, right? And that it's sort of a legal decree that you are living up to in your own life.
Oh, I like that.
Interesting, right?
Yeah.
Good job, etymology. Jackson, as you know, we are very determined in our recaps in 30 seconds or less. Can you please count me in so I can do my best to tell you what happened in this chapter?
Yes. Are you ready?
Born ready.
3, 2, 1.
So Harry admits to Ron and Hermione that he's the one who gave Fred and George the money because Ron is like, oh my God, my mom is going to somehow be mad at me about this. Ron always making it about him. The Quidditch game is happening and Hagrid comes and takes Hermione and Harry and is like, guys, I need your help with something. I might lose my job, in which case you're going to have to take care of my giant brother. He is very scary and potentially violent, but also I'm doing my best because I'm very committed to taking care of him and he had a hard life. I do not know how to talk about the non-human creatures in Harry Potter, like house elves, werewolves, giants. I feel like J.K. Rowling does not know what these are metaphors for,
mm-hmm.
and tries to have it 18 different ways. And I'm like, Grop is really scary and also sad.
Yeah, I'm fully with you. It's like, I feel very uncomfortable with language around this. And it's like, I'm always tempted to be like, I see the humanity in these. And I'm like, no, they're not humans. In fact, centaurs in particular, based on what we know in the universe, would be very offended for me to use that language. And so then it's like, yeah.
Jackson, are you ready to give your version of a 30-second recap?
I'm ready to do my best.
Okay, on your mark, get set, go.
Okay, so the chapter opens in kind of the aftermath of Fred and George leaving, and the swamp is still there, and kids are really, and Peeves are trying to give Umbridge a hard time. So we get a lot of that, and then it's time for Quidditch, and the winner might get the Quidditch World Cup. There's weird sports stats in there that don't quite add up. And Harry and Hermione are about to start watching Ron, but then Hagrid comes, and oh no, and they have to go to the Forbidden Forest, and they meet Grop, but then they also see the centaurs, and there's a lot of conflict there that needs to be resolved. But then it turns out Ron won the cup.
Yeah, Ron just can't be watched.
Yeah. Hermione even has a line of like, you know, I think with Fred and George gone, like he might really step into his own confidence. And I fully believe that that is part of what happened.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Without them there to mock him. So Jackson, an exciting thing happens in this chapter, which is that our theme word, determination, comes up twice in the chapter. That almost never happens. The first one is that Cho is determinedly not looking at Harry. I don't usually think of determination as being a negative.
Right. I was going to say the same thing. And, you know, it's not really because she is doing something, but the determinedly not is interesting language.
So what's going on is that they're between classes. And then we just get this sentence that Cho Chang had just walked across the courtyard, determinedly not looking at him. And what's interesting about this is that because it's from Harry's perspective, we don't know how determinedly, like maybe she just didn't see him.
That's a great point. That's a very good point. I was thinking about it being from Harry's perspective, and what it says right before this is that he's sort of like listening to Ron and Hermione talk, and Harry loses track of what he was agreeing to. Cho Chang had just walked across the courtyard determinedly not looking at him. And so he is very much paying attention to her. Like he is hyper clued in. And so I wonder, yeah, how much she is or not. But even thinking if she is, it is a funny thing to think of having two like very determined, like focused on this, but pointedly not focusing on each other kind of thing happening.
Yeah. I just also think that it's so funny how we can project other people being determined, right? Like a friend of mine has very happy, lovely, talented children who are loud and she likes quiet. And so she will say to me, it is like they are determined to drive me up the wall, right? Like, and they just aren't thinking about her when they're being loud, right? But sometimes, like, the other person can feel determined, even though you have no reason to believe that they are. I don't know. Cho could be going about her life. We don't know.
Right. Well, yeah, if she's got the Quidditch game coming up, you know, there's all kinds of things on her mind. I think that's such a great point because it is so easy to fall into like the trap of assuming that you're the main character, kind of.
Yeah.
That anything anyone is doing is somehow a reaction to you or related to your actions and feelings. And so often, everyone else is thinking the same thing, which means it's not actually about you.
Right. It's so rarely about me. I find it very comforting. But the other time that determined comes up is, I think, an even more joyful one, which is that Peeves is determinedly unscrewing the chandelier. The last thing that, you know, Fred and George said as they left in the last chapter was, "Give him hell, Peeves." And Peeves is determined to live up to this. And it's really interesting, right? Because Filch is determined to use this opportunity to get rid of Peeves, and it, right, like, which will only make Peeves more determined to wreak havoc in the meantime, right? Because sometimes I do think determination is just like matched with somebody else's. You know, you think of like great rivalries making each other better, right? Like Larry Bird and Magic Johnson, they played better because of each other, right? Or I was told this a lot as a kid, like, if you ignore your brothers, they'll stop trying to annoy you, right? That there's something about someone else being determined that can make you more determined.
Yeah, I love that example specifically for this chapter and even this exact moment, because it's Peeves determinedly trying to unscrew a chandelier, but the next thing is McGonagall sort of instructing him, oh, it unscrews the other way. And McGonagall would never have done that in any prior kind of context. Like, this is very much because she is against Umbridge. She's against, you know, this systematic takeover of Hogwarts. And so it does bring out that determination in McGonagall as well.
Oh, yeah. The more righteous that Umbridge is, the more disloyal McGonagall has to be. It's as if somebody else's determination, you feel as though you have to have a proportionate response to their determination. And I love all of the moments in these few chapters of the teachers undermining Umbridge. She has been walking around undermining their authority for months.
Mm-hmm.
And now they get to be like, oh, I don't know how to clean up the swamp. I'm sorry.
It is one of my all-time favorite moments in the series, is like the students fighting back in this kind of goofier way, but also the professors just being like, oh, yeah, yeah, sorry, don't know how that works. Guess you'll have to figure it out. Because it also like illustrates that she doesn't know. Like, she was acting like she had all of these skills as an educator, and it's revealing that she doesn't.
Yep. Oh, that's it. I don't know how I had never thought of that. That Flitwick is like, oh, I don't know how. I'm just a dumb blonde. But it does show that, like, Umbridge then can't do it herself.
Mm-hmm.
Or that, like, Flitwick added an extra enchantment to, like, keep the swamp around,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Like, they really, this is revealing a lot. The fact that this swamp isn't being dried up.
I do like that you brought up Filch's determination as well as part of this dynamic of cleaning up all the messes. And the fact that, like, Filch is horrible and he wants to enact violence on students and all that, but he's always put in an impossible position. Like, let's say that these, you know, top of their expertise professors actually can't figure out how to clean up the swamp. Why do you think someone who has limited magical abilities would then be able to? Why would you put that all on one individual? Like, it's just so unfair. Like, Filch is a complicated character for me because I constantly feel bad for him.
Yep.
And also, he wants to physically abuse students. So it's like...
Yeah. I do think it is possible to separate the two, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we have to deal with the fact that he wants to be abusive. And also, we need to deal with the fact that he is engaged in several systemic oppressions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where he is living as a squib in a magical school and has a position that isn't respected and is given no resources. The fact that there is one maintenance person for a castle, it's a castle. A whole castle. Like, it does not add up. Poor Filch.
Yeah.
I would also be
it really doesn't add up.
Upset all of the time. And there are abilities everywhere to magically clean. And yet, I guess there are the house elves who do a lot of the cleaning.
Wow. Yeah, we did fully gloss over that.
Yeah.
Okay, fair. I am also interested in how determination makes itself known in ways that... You know, like, we were talking about the dynamic of maybe there's someone else you sort of have some kind of rivalry with, and that can bring it out too. But I'm sort of thinking about like these systems of oppression, when you've been put in a situation against your will, and that is bringing out determination, and how that's kind of a different determination than determination maybe from like a passion or just something that you like really feel like you want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that we really see that with the students in this chapter, right? The students are inspired by Fred and George and like the mayhem and chaos that they caused. And so they are setting off, for example, so many dung bombs in the hallways that students just walk out of class and immediately put a bubblehead charm on themselves because they're just like preventative measure. Like everything here is chaotic. And I do think sometimes determination really is just born from life circumstance, right? Like you feel passionately about, you know, engaging in performance and writing. And that is something that comes, I would imagine, at least in large part from within. But then there are also circumstances that happen to us that you're like, wow, I didn't know I was going to. I would rather not be called to environmentalism, but like that's the world that I live in. And so like that, you know, it's like our moral responsibility to be called to thinking about what conservation looks like. And I think that the kids at Hogwarts, even like the quote unquote, like well-behaved kids, right? Like these are not kids who are like called to mischief, but I don't know, like push them into the right corner and they will get determined too.
Yeah, I'm now remembering like when we had a moment similar to this in high school where all of us who were like top of the class, presidents of all the extracurriculars, there was just this, like something that was going on at the school that we were just fed up with. And it wasn't like that horrible, but it was a kind of like stupid new policy. And we came up with a very mischievous way to kind of protest against it. And then we all got in trouble, but it was a thing that we had organized where we were like, this is the punishment that will be enacted on us. Make sure you have like enough strikes in your system before you do it. And like even the teachers who were punishing us were like, oh, you're all very well behaved in detention kind of thing. But it was like we weren't usually troublemakers, but there was something that had moved us enough that we were like, we're going to take action. And our taking action was something silly, but it was still like a message that we were trying to send, or that we had just sort of like gotten to that point, you know, or we were like, we got to just raise our voices on this at the very least.
Yeah. It's so funny, right? Because I feel like some of the things that you were talking about that you wanted to parse out were determination versus stubbornness and commitment. And I think these kids aren't being stubborn. And I don't even think that they're like committed, right? They want to stop living at a school where this type of rebellion has to exist, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't want to do this. You have created an environment in which like I have to breathe protest in everything that I do. And so their determination is entirely like provoked, right? And it is thorough, but I can imagine being a student there being like, I'm just here to study. Like, I don't want to be engaged in this stuff, but you're just so oppressive that I feel like I just have to throw a dung bomb as I'm walking through the hallway.
Well, yeah, and that one, I guess, doesn't add up for what I was about to say, which was like a reminder that a lot of what they're doing as mischief is like taking the skiving snack boxes. They're giving themselves fevers and like pustules on their faces and vomiting. Like, that is physically uncomfortable. That is like a not a just fun and silly thing that they're doing, even though a lot of them might prefer that to sitting in class with Umbridge, understandably. Right. But that's still like a pretty big thing that they're doing.
Yeah.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This week's episode of Harry Potter and the Sacred Text is brought to you by Redfin. Let's say for some reason you can't get back to Grimmauld Place, so you need to find a new home. If you're like me, you would go to Redfin. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes and sends you personalized recommendations, so finding the home that's perfect for you has never been easier. If you see something you like, just book a tour straight from the app. And when you're ready to buy, an experienced local Redfin agent can guide you through the whole process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents know how to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put toward your next home. They even have a function where Trelawney will tell you whether or not she can see you in this house. Redfin. It's how Molly found the burrow. Download the Redfin app to get started. Jackson, this conversation about like being willing to have, you know, painful pustules on your face in order to be part of this sort of uprising that's happening at Hogwarts. It gets to the question that you and I were talking about at the top of the episode in response to your story about sacrifice. And I am so wary of sacrifice, but I do think it is like the true test of determination, right? Is if you are willing to give something up because you are so committed to getting a thing, whatever it is, like that is the litmus test for real determination, right?
Mm-hmm. No, I definitely agree. I think that's like arguably when it kind of becomes determination is when there are other decisions that you'll have to make. Kind of like what we were saying with the legal side of it, of like, this is my determination, this is my law.
Right.
And that is not always an easy thing to see to fruition or, you know. And I think one of the biggest examples we see of this in this chapter is with Hagrid and Grop.
Yeah, I want to get into the gropness of it in a moment, but that conversation between Harry, Hermione, and Hagrid, where Hagrid says to them, I know I'm about to get fired, and they're like, well, you know, well, there are things that we can do. And he's like, nope, there are some things that are just more important. Mm. And I love this conversation between Hagrid and Hermione and Harry, even before they go and see Grop, you know, because Hagrid is saying to them, Umbridge is now convinced that I'm the one who put the Niffler in her office. And so she's looking for an excuse to fire me. And he says, like, I would quit, like, because, right, like everything has changed so much that even though a couple of years ago, nothing was more important to him than being a professor at Hogwarts, now he's like, I do not want to be here and I don't want to be humiliated the way that Trelawney was humiliated.
Mm-hmm.
But he's, you know, so determined to take care of Grop that his pride is less relevant to him, his career is less relevant to him, and he's really sacrificing so much just even in the concept of taking care of Grop before there's the actual sacrificing his body and his well-being and taking care of Grop.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought the pride into it because that's something I was thinking of because he does specifically say like he wants to have an exit strategy that would not lead to the public humiliation of Trelawney because his life has been public humiliation. And like one of the biggest reasons he wanted to be a professor was so he could have that institutional respect.
Right.
And so even though he's still trying to like avoid some of that with the way that he gets laid off or fired, I think it really does say a lot to your point that this is so much more important to him than even the respect of being a professor, like a level of respect he had never had in his life prior to that point.
Right. The thing about this is you can't pass your determination on to someone else.
Yes. Oh, that is such a good point for this example.
Right. He's like, I'm determined to take care of Grop. And Harry and Hermione are like, cool, we're not. Right.
Well,
like,
I was even thinking Grop is not determined to learn English and live there with Hagrid.
Yes. Sometimes determination takes consensus.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just wondering, like, what do you make of what Hagrid is doing? Is his determination this like toxic stubbornness?
Yeah. I mean, I think it shows a lot of sides of Hagrid that we're sort of familiar with. There's the side of you know, seeing other beings for who they are and not just, you know, what they look like, if they look scary to other people, and knowing that, like, they have love and potential in them. And Hagrid is so good at bringing that out. I mean, Hagrid is one of the most maternal figures in the book, which I love.
Absolutely.
And we also know Hagrid's background of discrimination, but also abandonment. And so the fact that he found a brother, he found a family member, I think he's going to do anything to hold on to that family member, especially seeing that family member being bullied and discriminated against and also abandoned by their mother. And so, like, I fully understand where Hagrid is coming from, and it does not seem like he was even able to talk to Grop to get consent because there was a language barrier. And so that makes it quite a bit more of an uncomfortable situation. Before we even get into the fact that consistently throughout the series, Hagrid puts enormous levels of responsibility onto young teenagers.
I know. Poor Hermione in this chapter. I'm just thinking about the times where, like, truly determination isn't enough. And I remember once breaking up with someone and them looking at me and saying, "I reject your breakup." Mm. And I was like, "You can't be determined to keep us together. Like, it's a one person decision, right? Like, this is actually not something I need consensus on. What you need consensus on is being in a relationship."
Right.
And I feel like what they were trying to say is, like, "I am determined to keep this together." And it's like, well, that's not enough. Like, you can't just grit your way through everything. And I don't know, is this attempt of Hagrid's quote-unquote successful, is this the right thing to do? Because it is like a non-consensus-based determination.
I think that's a really good example. I mean, I think that's something that, like, you know, a lot of us have been on one end of that in some way in relationships. With respect to Hagrid and Grop, I think it's a lot more complicated because, like, it almost feels like a kidnapping situation. And he's, like, keeping him tied up in a forest surrounded by people who do not want him there. And so it's, like, it's even more complicated. But I do love that what we've gotten into here about determination, sort of, like, when it involves more than one party needing the affirmative consent of all parties.
Yeah. Grop doesn't know the word for affirmative consent, so he can't give it.
But Hagrid believes he could teach him that word.
So Jackson, we are now going to do our sacred reading practice, which is Lectio Divina. And I have picked a sentence here, and I will read it aloud to you. It is, "Oh yes, tiny," said Hermione with a kind of hysterical sarcasm. So step one of Lectio Divina is where we give a little bit of information about the context of the sentence, and then we talk about what is literally happening inside the sentence. So do you want to just start us off with just a smidgen of context as to where Hermione is saying this?
Yes. So Hermione, Harry, Hagrid, and Grop are in the Forbidden Forest. I think Grop might still be asleep. This is when Harry and Hermione have just been shown him, and Hagrid is explaining who Grop is and why he brought him back. And one of the things he had been saying is that Grop was actually small for a giant, and that was one reason that their mom kind of abandoned him, and that other people in his community made fun of him because he was so small. And he says small, and Hermione's like, "Oh yeah, tiny," because she's very scared, and this is the largest creature she has ever seen in her life.
Right. Teeny. The hysterical sarcasm. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's an interesting phrase because it does get across how she is, you know, terrified right now and responding with sarcasm, which I think is a very Hermione thing and kind of a very, like, I think very intelligent people will often do that, of, like, they're short-circuiting in their brain, but they can still kind of go to, like, wordplay and sarcasm somehow. But the word hysterical is obviously very weighted, and that always gets to me because I just, like, phonetically, it's such a good word. And so I hate that it has the history that it has. And yeah. I think, you know, particularly throughout this series, we can see a lot of ways that words like that are used around Hermione, words like bossy. And so throwing hysterical in there really stuck with me.
Especially because she is the smallest person there and the one that Grop is going to be most interested in. Mm-hmm. So she is correct to be quote unquote hysterical.
Yeah.
Because she is the most vulnerable person here.
Absolutely.
And like this person of Hagrid, who she thinks of as someone who would protect her, is directly putting her in danger.
Mm.
And that feeling of like, you and I actually don't have the same values here. So I do not trust that you would help me. I don't know. Like, that would make me hysterical.
Yeah, absolutely.
She's scared. Also, Jackson, this just occurred to me. She has troll trauma.
Oh, yeah. She was picked up and flung around by a troll a few years ago.
Yeah, only a 12-foot troll, and Grop is 16 feet.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Wow, that's just such a good point. Yeah, she
blew my own mind.
Whether consciously or not, she's absolutely kind of having, like, flashbacks from that. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so step two is where we talk about other stories, other movies, songs, books that this reminds us of. And so I'll read it again. Oh, yes, tiny, said Hermione with a kind of hysterical sarcasm.
Yeah, it reminds me of the scene in King Kong when Fay Wray, like the you know, tiny, beautiful woman is being held up by the giant gorilla the size of the Empire State Building, which I think is a visual that was probably intended, at least in the first book. I don't fully remember what continues to happen with Grop in the books versus the movies here. But and I think that also still leans into the hysterical side of this sentence, because like we have in media decided to make that juxtaposition of like the tiny helpless woman and the giant creature. And I think that's still happening here. And it brings up what you said of like, she's the most vulnerable one. She has kind of the most right to be scared, but there's also something there of just sort of like the treatment of women in media and in scenes like this.
Yeah. That also came to mind. And I think part of it is because of the visual in the movie that I remember. The way that Grop in the movie picks up Emma Watson is absolutely a reference to King Kong and Fay Wray. What it reminds me of, Jackson, and I feel like I'm allowed to use this at least once a year, and I don't think I have yet in 2024, is Grey's Anatomy. Like, there are a couple of times where Meredith, the lead doctor in Grey's Anatomy, is like losing it, right? And it is always because there's like a bomb in the hospital or an active shooter in the hospital. And how often in television, when people are in those really awful situations, they are still able to have like witty rejoinders. There's like a Meredith Kyle Chandler scene with a bomb where they're like kind of almost flirting.
Mm.
While they're dealing with a bomb.
Wow.
And I don't know. I've never dealt with a bomb. But when I'm hysterical and scared, my wit leaves me. And so I don't know what that is as like a convention. That when people are scared, we still want them to be funny.
That is an interesting thing. I wonder as an audience why we want that. One thing that I was thinking is that when I am in a very high stress situation, some of my like politeness goes away. And so I might make a much more biting remark mm-hmm. than I would otherwise. And that kind of feels like this moment for mm-hmm. Hermione of like, you know, fully rightfully she is responding the way she should be, but she has just been like made a pretty sarcastic comment in response to like a really rough story that Hagrid was telling. And I don't feel like in a moment where she wasn't terrified, she would have like
yes.
veered towards rudeness in that way. So maybe that's some aspect of it, or at least that's what's reminding me for, like, of my own experiences.
Which is step three of Lectio.
Wow.
What does this remind us of in our own lives? If you have something specific, the sentence one more time is, oh yes, tiny, said Hermione, with a kind of hysterical sarcasm.
I'm wanting to focus more on the beginning, the like, oh yes, tiny, more than the mm-hmm. hysterical sarcasm. And I'm not quite there. Do you have one?
Yeah, I just had ankle surgery. I like try to make the whole nursing staff and all the doctors like me. Because I think on some primitive level, I'm like, if they like me, they will do a better job on my surgery. And I don't think that's true. I think that these are professionals who would do a very good job on my surgery no matter what. And the few surgical not great things that have happened to me, I don't think were because they were like, you know what? I didn't like her personality. But there are stressful moments where my response is actually to turn on the charm and to be like, no, no, tell me about you. Oh, I love your mask. Like, I treat it like I'm on a first date, but with everyone. And so that's what it reminds me of.
It's like you want to get an A+ in patient.
I do. I have asked nurses that. Am I your favorite patient? I have absolutely asked. Yeah, no. I think I ask that every time I'm in the hospital. I'm like, am I your favorite? Am I the best behaved one? I feel called out. Jackson, what does this remind you of in your life?
Well, I definitely default to that too. Of, you know, I said in very high stress situations, maybe I lose some of my like etiquette. But I think in situations where I just feel like a little bit at like unease or threatened a tiny bit, I definitely go to like turning on the charm as much as I can.
Like RMV, DMV situations, mm-hmm. I'm like, I'm going to be the nicest one here. So Jackson, the question that we end it with is, what does this make you feel called to? And so the sentence one more time is, oh yes, tiny, said Hermione with a kind of hysterical sarcasm. I think, Jackson, it makes me want to sometimes just yell, I'm scared. Because, like, fear is the emotion from which I do the things I am least proud of. And so I think that I statements are hard. Nonviolent communication is hard. All of these things are really hard. But something I want to get more comfortable saying, like, even just like in an interaction with my kid, right? Like, I am scared. I am scared of offending you. I don't know, right? Like, I think it's sometimes important to just be like, I am scared right now. What about you?
Yeah, I love that. You kind of gave me an answer to mine, because what I was going to say is that I want to just examine how I respond in moments of fear or stress or feeling threatened. And so maybe that's one way to respond, is to just like say how I actually feel.
Yeah, and be like, I don't know what's next, but I'm scared.
Yeah.
You can't imagine Hermione in this moment being like, Hagrid, I'm scared, right? And Hagrid, yeah, just potentially being able to hear that more than sarcasm.
Maybe. I think that actually might bring up what you were just saying of like, would that make it better or worse? Like, one thing that you brought up was that Hermione doesn't feel protected by Hagrid in this moment, where in other moments she would have. And so I think when you have that difference of values, like there are people that you don't even feel safe telling you're scared to. Totally. And so that can't always work.
And then that's heartbreaking, right?
Yeah.
When you find out, when you say, I'm scared, and they're just dismissive. If Hagrid were then to be like, no, there's no reason to be scared.
Which I think he might in this situation.
Me too.
Oh, that's sad.
Well, maybe that's the thing, right, is to notice when someone else says that they're scared, even if they're not using the words scared, to validate it.
Yeah, and I think that brings us back around to what we were saying about determination, of you might be determined for something, but is everyone else in that equation also determined? And remembering that it's not always about you, of maybe they actually aren't determined on something you're assuming they're determined on.
Well, Jackson, thank you so much for doing this Lectio Divina with me.
Thank you for guiding me through it again.
This week's episode of Harry Potter and the Sacred Text is brought to you by Redfin. Let's say for some reason you can't get back to Grimmauld Place, so you need to find a new home. If you're like me, you would go to Redfin. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes and sends you personalized recommendations, so finding the home that's perfect for you has never been easier. If you see something you like, just book a tour straight from the app. And when you're ready to buy, an experienced local Redfin agent can guide you through the whole process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents know how to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put toward your next home. They even have a function where Trelawney will tell you whether or not she can see you in this house. Redfin. It's how Molly found the Burrow. Download the Redfin app to get started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
This week's voicemail is from Grace.
Hi, Harry Potter and the Sacred Text team. My name is Grace, and I would like to offer a blessing for Aunt Petunia. My grandpa passed away of COVID during the height of the pandemic. He passed away alone in a hospital room, and due to COVID restrictions, I was unable to attend his funeral. While listening to your podcast, I was thinking about how Petunia reacted when she found out that her sister passed away. While Petunia's actions towards Harry are inexcusable, has any wizard paused to see the grief that she feels? In previous books, wizards would provide information to Aunt Petunia and Uncle Vernon using owls or fireplaces, often with no consideration of how a muggle may react out of fear or confusion. Petunia found out about her sister's death through a letter. No one came to her door to explain the situation. In the days after Lily and James's death, was she able to attend the funeral? Has Petunia visited Lily's gravesite? As the only remaining relative, did she consult in any of those plans, or did wizards make those decisions without her input? While Petunia's actions towards Harry are inexcusable, is her relief a result of her lack of closure? I understand how difficult it is to not be able to participate in final rites due to extreme circumstances. While this doesn't excuse or explain ultimately, I do think that some empathy should be given to Aunt Petunia at this horrifying loss of her sister and the lack of information and autonomy that she was given. I'd be interested to hear what you two think. I'm a big fan of your podcast and I'm grateful for your time. Have a great day.
Grace, thank you so much for this voicemail. You know, I do think one of the things that all humans have in common is grief and losing loved ones. And so I think that you're exactly right, that these moments of grief are places where we can pause and hold empathy for people who are really hard to hold empathy for. And like you said, it does not excuse anything else that Petunia does. But, you know, yeah, I do not personally have faith in the wizarding world's diplomacy in this moment.
Yeah. And I mean, Grace, thank you so much for this perspective. And I think, you know, also just thinking back to when Lily first found out that she was going to go to Hogwarts and Petunia wanted to go too, and she was just cut out. And from the version of events and the telling of it that we have seen, there was not, you know, much care put into the handling of that. And I think that in itself was the beginning of a form of grief for Petunia, of losing the sister that she thought she was going to grow up with and go to school with. And instead, her sister went off and had this other life that Petunia also couldn't tell anyone about. You know, when we think about muggle-born right. students, I think about that a lot, of just this huge secret and weight that is on their families that they always have to keep. So there was a lot that Petunia was up against, which, as we've all said, does not in any way excuse her behaviors towards Harry. But, you know, humans contain a lot of layers and nuances. It's similar to, I think, what we said about Filch earlier in the episode.
Yeah. And Grace, I just also want to say that I'm so sorry for your loss. That's really hard that you weren't able to be there for your grandfather. And I'm so sorry. It is now time for us to honor members of our community who have been loved and lost. Sherry Lee Beck, who was 84, a grandmother, mother, wife, and friend to anyone she met. Jim Bailey, who is 85, a grandpa who loved justice, theological inquiry, and pecan pie. And Cecilia Gentili, who is 52, a storyteller, fighter, matriarch, and guardian angel for the trans people of New York City and beyond. May their memories be a blessing to us all. Jackson, we now offer blessings to characters in the chapter. Who would you like to bless?
I would like to bless Grop, because we really have no idea, you know, what's going on in his head and how he feels, except we do know that he was brought somewhere against his will. He tried to go back where he was from for much on the journey, as Hagrid says. And I'm sure he's just very confused and scared, but has a language barrier, so he can't say that he's scared like we were talking about. And even though Hagrid does have these intentions and is treating him with love the way that he knows how, I just imagine that Grop is probably, yeah, feeling very scared and confused. And so I just want to send him a blessing.
Amen. I want to bless Harry for a moment that we didn't get to talk about, which is that he comes clean in this chapter that he is the angel investor in Fred and George's joke shop venture. And I just think that he is doing this exactly right. I think that he gave the money to the right people. I think remaining anonymous was like a completely reasonable and lovely thing to do earlier. And now that he is concerned that Molly is going to be upset when she finds out that premises have been gotten by Fred and George, he's like, okay, now it's time for me to admit that I was the person who gave this money. And there's just like a ton of wisdom in this. And I, you know, may we all be more like this 15-year-old and not take credit, but then take responsibility. That's lovely.
Yeah.
Next week, we will be reading Book 5, Chapter 31, OWLs, through the theme of naivete with Matthew Potts. We just have a few days left as part of our fundraising efforts for On the Rise. If you haven't contributed, please do. There are all sorts of fun perks associated with the fundraiser. So find out more about that at notsorryworks.com. And of course, you can subscribe for ad-free episodes on Apple Podcasts and through our Patreon at patreon.com/Harry Potter Sacred Text. This was a Not Sorry production. We are a feminist production company. Our executive producers are Caitlin Hoffmeister and me, Vanessa Zoltan. We are edited and produced by AJ Uramas. Our music is by Ivan Paisau and Nick Bull, and we are distributed by Acast. Thanks this week to Grace for their voicemail, Ariana Nettleman, Julia Argy, Margaret H. Wilson, Nikki Zoltan, Hannah Rehack, Matt Potts, Casper Turkile, Courtney Brown, Natalie Folkert, Stephanie Paulsell, and everyone who sent in the names of their loved ones. And a special thanks this week to Jackson Bird. Jackson, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Wow, I said I was ready with so much confidence, and then I have Deathly Hallows open instead of Order of the Phoenix. I'm so sorry. Okay.
That's okay.